We'll begin with our blessing. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam Asher bachar banu mikol hamim V'natan lanu et torato Baruch atah Adonai Notein haTorah. Nice to see you all. Thanks for coming out on this cold day for Parsha Chaye Sarah, the lives of Sarah, which is actually concerns herself primarily with the death of Sarah and the search for the new next matriarch of the Jewish people, who, as we know, is going to be Rebecca. But we're going to look at the text today. This is based on a class by Shira Smiles. And what we're going to look at today is a little bit about Eliezer. Eliezer, who is the Avraham's servant and is the one who was tasked with the job to go find the right person for Yitzchak. And Avraham gives him a fairly specific, on one hand, direction, and on the other hand, kind of general direction. So we want to see what it is that Avraham tells him to do, what Eliezer, in fact, does do, why he sets about doing what he does, and looking into some of the wording. We're going to zero in on one particular sentence, one particular verse, but first let's kind of get our background so we know what we are talking about. So after Sarah dies, Isaac is not married, and Abraham realizes that it's necessary for him to find a wife for Yitzchak. I'm not sure why he didn't find a wife for him before. There's all sorts of interesting understanding. I'll just share this as an aside. I wasn't even planning to say this, but there is a mystical commentary that says that before the Akedah, before the binding of Isaac, that Yitzchak had a soul, and he had a feminine soul. And that as a feminine soul, there was no appropriate person for him to be married to, because we don't have a feminine soul with a feminine soul. It doesn't connect. It doesn't match up. But that when his soul left him at the time of the Akedah, of the binding, and it was then re-ensouled, that the soul that came back wasn't the same soul. It was a masculine soul. And that when he had the masculine soul, then it became possible for him to have a spouse in the form of a woman. So it was right after that that then Avraham sees that Yitzchak is different now and that he can now have a wife. So it's just like a way far out there. This is based on the Ari about the souls of Isaac. Yeah.
How soon did Sarah die after the Akedah?
At the same time as. So there are two interpretations. One is that the Satan, the accuser, the tempter, showed her a vision of Yitzchak on Har HaMoriah, but as a completed korban and a completed offering, and that she died of shock from that. There's another that says that when she saw that she realized her life's work was finished. Because as we know, it wasn't that she died young. She was 127. And it says that she was so righteous that the angel of death couldn't get in to take her life, and there had to be a moment when she lost her spiritual connection, or there was some interruption, some distraction for a moment, that then that's when she died. So it's either because her life was completed, which it was, or that it was out of shock and that was the time. But it was time for her to go anyway. I'm sorry?
The shock was the opening.
The shock was the opening. Just that brief moment. Okay. The Ari was a Kabbalist, and the Ari means literally the lion. His name was Rabbi Yitzchak Luria. So if you ever hear of Lurianic Kabbalah, our Kabbalah is based on primarily the teachings of the Ari.
So he just took that idea of the feminine soul from...
He is in a realm that is beyond our comprehension kind of person. So it's like, whoa, okay, I never heard that before. Okay, so that was just interesting. So just as an aside, but now we have that Yitzchak's going to get married, and Avraham needs to find the right person for him. And he has, instead of himself, he himself going to look for a bride for him. Yitzchak also could not leave the land of Israel. It says that Abraham considered him because he had been offered as an offering, even though it didn't go through, that he had a level of holiness. And once something has been offered as an elevation, it's too holy to be taken outside the land of Israel. It's kind of like taking something, offerings that were done in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple. They couldn't be removed from the temple precincts because they were considered holy. So Isaac himself was considered too holy to leave the land of Israel to go look for a wife. Abraham didn't. I'm not sure why he didn't, but he sends Eliezer to go, and he gives him fairly specific directions about this. So let's take a look at what he says to him. And page 111, he makes Eliezer swear that he's going to do this, and he opens up by saying, "Place your hand under my thigh," at the top of page 111, and then it continues with verse 3. So let's take a look at verse 3. Patricia, if you'd like to open for us there.
"And I will have you swear by Hashem, God of heaven and God of earth, that you not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I dwell. Rather, to my land and to my kindred shall you go, and take a wife for my son, for Isaac."
Okay. We're putting aside that he couldn't marry a Canaanite. It's because the Canaanites were a category of people who were not of the moral quality to be a wife for Yitzchak. That's a different, separate discussion. But let's take a look at what he does say. Who is it that Abraham wants Yitzchak to marry?
One of his relatives.
Okay, so he's supposed to marry one of his relatives. "From his kindred shall you go and take a wife for my son, for Isaac." Now, if you are Eliezer and you were given this information, what plans might you be making right now as you're getting ready to go? What's going to be the first thing you do when you get to the land of where Abraham's family is from? What should you do? Ask for the family. Say, "Do you know where Abraham's family lives? I'm supposed to go find them." That would be what you would think that Eliezer does. But we see that's not what Eliezer does. He goes to the land, but there's a whole preliminary part. So first of all, he asks Abraham, like, "Well, what if the woman doesn't want to come back here? What if she doesn't want to leave?" And he says, "Okay, then if she doesn't want to come, whoever the right person appears to be, so then you're absolved from the oath. You don't worry about it. But just don't make Isaac leave the land of Israel. And if you can't find the right person, if she won't come, then you're absolved." Okay, so now what's going to happen, and he also says, this is supposed to help out. He goes on to kind of encourage Eliezer that everything is going to be okay, because he picks up in verse 7 to reassure. And Jen, why don't you read verse 7?
"Hashem, God of heaven, who took me from the house of my father and from the land of my birth, who spoke concerning me and who swore to me, saying, 'To your offspring I will give this land,' he will send his angel before you, and you will take a wife for my son from there."
And continue verse 8 as well.
But if the woman will not wish to follow you, you shall then be absolved of this oath of mine. However, do not return my son to there."
Okay. So on one hand, he's saying an angel is going to come, go before you to help out with this, and you will take a wife for my son from there. You're going to have divine assistance, and this is going to work out. However, there's always free choice, and from this we also get the halacha, is a woman cannot be forced to marry somebody. If she says no, it's no. So even though whatever movies you see at the Jam Festival or whatever, that's a cultural thing, that's not a halachic thing. That goes against Jewish law. A woman cannot be forced to marry anybody against her will.
That brings up a question, which I was hotly speaking with my son this morning. When a captive woman is taken and she shaves her head and clips her nails and mourns her family, whose decision is it if she gets to marry him or wants to marry him or goes wherever she goes, and where does she go?
You know, that's a question that's beyond our discussion for today. We'll have to talk about it later. So, I'm sorry. It's a mutual thing. Except it's not really mutual. There's a whole other layer of something going on there that's way bigger than this conversation.
Okay.
But she would go back. She would be released. She would be free. She would be freed and paid, and she would be freed. Susan.
What is this land that he goes to?
To Aram Naharaim, which is where Abraham's family is living. Yeah, again, geography, not my strong suit. But there's going on a trek up to the land.
Is it Or?
I'm sorry?
Or?
No, Ur Kasdim is from where he was originally, but then the family went on part of a trek, so I think it's separate, but I'm not positive. I don't know. Okay. So, again, that the woman cannot be forced to marry, so if she says no, even though this angelic, there's supposed to be this divine assistance, Eliezer can't say, well, an angel said you have to come with me, so come with me. So it's like whatever she says, it'll be whatever she says. Okay, so then Avraham goes, and he takes 10 camels with him, and he sets out with gifts and a whole bunch of other things on verse 10. And where does he go? He makes his way in verse 10. And why don't we continue there? Tova, verse 10 on page 111.
Okay. Then the servant took 10 camels of his master's camels and set out with all the bounty of his master in his hand and made his way to Aram Naharaim, to the city of Nahor.
Okay, so he's getting there, he's getting to the neighborhood where his family is from, but instead of going in, why don't we continue? And Melody, do you want to read verse 11?
He made the camels kneel down outside the city toward the well of water at evening time, the time when women come out to draw.
Okay, so does he go into the city?
No. No.
Nope. He's going to the well outside of the city. He doesn't even go into the city at all. He has the camels kneel down. He's waiting at the most public area. It's like going to the mall. You know, he's like going to the most public area possible where everybody and anybody is coming to get water. And then he says, verse 12. Kay, why don't you continue there?
And he said, Hashem, God of my master Abraham, may you so arrange it for me to stay that you do kindness with my master Abraham.
And continue.
See, I stand here by the spring of water, and the daughters of the townsmen come out to draw. Let it be that the maiden to whom I shall say, please tip over your jug so I may drink, and who replies, drink, and I will even water your camels, her will you have designated for your servant, for Isaac, and may I know through her that you have done kindness with my master.
Okay. So what is this? He doesn't do what he was told to do. He has like a whole other plan, and his plan is he arranges a test. So there's a couple questions that come up. One is, we are not supposed to believe in omens. We don't say, you know, and if a bird flies over my house at 10 o'clock, that means that I should invest in whatever. We are not supposed to do that. It says we're supposed to be tamim. We're supposed to be straight and whole with God. God is running the world. We don't arrange for omens. We don't arrange for signs for things. So the question is, this is sounding pretty much like looking for a sign. So the question, is it a sign or is it a prayer? Because a prayer is different than a sign. So what we're going to see is that this is a prayer that he has, but it's still a little unusual because it's not what Avraham told him to do. And the wording that he uses is what we're going to go into. Now, I have to say that I think we can all agree that his test that he's arranging is to look for some good quality. He's looking for a certain quality. What is he looking for in this wife for Yitzchak? He's looking for kindness, somebody who's going to really extend herself because she's going to water the 10 camels and Eliezer. That's pretty extensive. So just as a side point to just show how sensitive Rivka actually is when Eliezer has the test, he says, please tip over your jug so I may drink, and who replies, drink and I will even water your camels. That's what Eliezer says it should be. But just for a moment, let's just skip ahead to when she actually says something. And let's go to verse 17 on page 113 and read that. And Eileen, do you want to read verse 17 and 18?
The servant ran towards her and said, let me sip, if you please, a little water from your jug. She said, drink, my lord, and quickly she lowered her jug to her hand and gave him drink.
Did she say anything about, and let me water your camels too?
No.
No, but what happens then on verse 19? Valerie, why don't you continue?
When she finished giving him to drink, she said, I will draw water even for your camels until they have finished drinking.
Okay, so what does she do that's different than what Eliezer set up?
She handed him the jug, she didn't tip it over.
Oh, okay, so that is...
First of all, he said, just let it tip over.
Okay.
The jug should just tip over.
Okay, so actually what I was thinking about is in the order with the camels and for him. So what happens, what's different?
Well, she,
She does Eliezer first, and when he is finished giving him drink, she says, I will draw water even for your camels. She doesn't say what he said. So you hear that really she's being more sensitive and more polite. Instead of saying, oh, it's kind of like saying, can I give you and your dog something to drink? What does that imply?
The dog is more important.
Or as important.
Or as important, you and your dog. So she's saying, first a human being, I'm feeding you. After you are done, I wasn't just offering you just because I only wanted to do you. I was just waiting till it's more appropriate that the person finishes. And I'm happy. I also will draw water for your camels. So it says that Rivka is so refined that even in her language, so it's obviously a change from what Eliezer says, but it's a change that demonstrates an even deeper sensitivity to Derech Eretz, to being polite. You don't say, can I give you and your dog a drink of water? Just a side point. All right. So when, and Kay, well, that's a, everything you raised are other great points. We're going to leave those to the side for now. But yes, there's always this slightly this difference there. It says that she lowers her pitcher. She still does tip from it, but it says that she was carrying, the reason it says she lowered it is she carried it out and in the open so that everyone could see that she had water to share. That other people, and water's precious, obviously. If you have to go and down to the well and draw it, it's like, you know, this is like gold. You don't just say, who wants a drink of water? Who wants a drink of water? Normally, if you work so hard to get your water, you kind of keep it under your cloak and nobody should know and nobody should ask you. You know, don't ask me to borrow my lawnmower. Like, I don't have one. Like, don't ask me. So she was opposite, is that she was a giver and she's looking. Who might need water? So somebody like that, it's not somebody that... All of the days of her life, she was somebody who was kind of stingy and not giving, and on that day, she happened to be a giving person. People aren't like that. This was just an expression of who she naturally was. That's why it specifically says she lowers her jug because it was up, and she lowered it down so that it could be seen.
That's heavy.
Yeah, and it's also heavy to carry it like that.
I was just thinking, you know, Eliezer has been around Abraham and Sarah.
Sorry,
I didn't see you. For many, many years. And so he's accustomed to this generosity that Abraham and Sarah had.
Absolutely.
And for him to experience this with Rebecca.
Yes.
It's like, aha.
Aha. And that's why he sets up like an Avraham test. Right. Is this someone who's going to fit in Avraham's household? So that's the test that he is coming up with. And we're going to take a look in a little bit to see that this test really means something more. Because if you're looking for a spouse, you're looking for a mate, most of us have more than one thing on our list. Okay? Is it really true, like, oh, if they are generous, is that the only thing? You may be wanting some other things. But we could see that, yeah, let's just start with that. That would actually be a really good thing. If we could get that, that would be great, and everything else will work out. But it's also indicative of other things about Rebecca. So we'll come back to that in a moment. So now what we're going to look at is exactly what Eliezer says to God in his prayer there, and how he introduces it. So we're going to go back to verse 12 on page 111. And this is, in the Hebrew, is Yud Bet, which is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the fifth line from the bottom, and that's where the verse starts. So the first thing that happens is the very first word that we see is, and he said in the Hebrew. But in the English. In the Hebrew, the very first word is the word right after the colon, and it's the word vayomar, and it has what's called a shalshelet over it. This is a note that only occurs four times in the entire Torah, and it is associated with moral equivocation, of being not sure, at some deep level, even if it may be subconscious. So it says that Eliezer is saying here, and the way it sounds is Vayomar, triple pause there. That gets your attention. Even if you're not paying attention to the Torah reading, somebody's like, whoa, where'd that come from? Okay? So this is in four times. Three of them are in Bereshit in Genesis. This one is the second one in the Torah here. This reference here has to do with Eliezer having some issue about his assignment. And the issue is that he has a daughter who he would love to marry, Yitzchak. But Eliezer is a Canaanite, and Avraham already said he's not marrying a Canaanite. But what if he goes and he says, like, oh, there's nobody here for Yitzchak, like, nobody passes muster there, I couldn't find anybody. Or he, you know, you can undermine, we'll call this a shidduch search, a mate, by asking enough questions that you rule people out. You know, like, you know, as Mrs. Smiles says, you can say, well, you know, at what age was she potty trained or something? Or, oh, you know, that's unacceptable. You can ask all sorts of questions to make anybody unacceptable. So there was a hesitancy by him thinking, what if I undermine this effort because I really have an agenda that I have a personal connection. I would really like Yitzchak to marry my daughter. And so this idea of what he was feeling inside is something that Eliezer struggled with. So if you look at the way that note looks, it looks like a zzz like that, and it represents kind of a back and forth in going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. It represents struggle. It represents moral struggle. So Eliezer had this going into this whole thing. And he recognizes that at some level, that he has this kind of issue, that he may be conflicted.
How do we know he had a daughter?
We know that from the Midrash, that he had a daughter and that he wanted her to marry him, to marry Yitzchak. Okay. All right, so it says, Vayomer Hashem Elokai. Okay, so he's saying God, Lord God. So he's calling on God, which is great. And he says that of his master Avraham, so he's talking about specifically, he's not calling on some idol, he's calling on God, of my master Avraham. And then he says in the Hebrew, in English, may you so arrange it for me this day that you do kindness with my master Avraham. So the day, things we're going to start out with first is where it says, may you so arrange it for me that you do kindness with my master Avraham, and it be this day. So the first word we're going to look at is it for me. Why does he say that for me? And in the Hebrew, it's lifanai. Why is Eliezer saying, may you arrange it for me that this happen? So now we're going to go to an idea that is such a beautiful idea to think about that applies to all of us, which is that good things happen through good people. And that Eliezer knows that there is going to be a woman, the right woman is going to be found for Yitzchak, but he wants to be the one through whom this great thing is going to happen. He wants the mitzvah to come through him. That he is a shaliach, he is a messenger, and he wants it to come through him, not through someone else. And that we want good things to come through us. We don't want bad things to happen through us. Sometimes we have kind of a weird reaction. Sometimes if we have to do something that is maybe has to be a little bit negative towards someone else, we're like, oh, well, that person deserved it. And I gave him a piece of my mind, and I gave them whatever. It's like, do you really want to be the one through whom God has to chastise another person? It's like, we don't really want to be that one. We want to be the one who has the good tidings for people. We want to be the one through whom the mitzvah is being worked. So Eliezer is saying, I want this to be through me. So interestingly, we have on Rosh Hashanah, we have the famous prayer that's called Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King, and we ask for a lot of things. We ask to be written in the Book of Life. Katfeinu b'sefer ha-chayim. Write us, inscribe us in the Book of Life. But we have another place that we also ask God to inscribe us, and that is in the Book of Merits. We want to be inscribed in the Book of Merits. That means merit that we get for doing mitzvahs. So how does one get inscribed in that Book of Merits, and what is being inscribed? So that on Rosh Hashanah, it's going to be determined how many mitzvah opportunities we are going to be presented with during the coming year. That's going to be inscribed for us, as well as what our livelihood's going to be, how much money we're going to earn, how much money we're going to get from one source or another. But we're inscribed in the Book of Merits is how many mitzvah opportunities are going to come our way. However, just because it's inscribed that a mitzvah opportunity is coming our way, what do we always have the free will to do?
Choose.
To do it or not do it. It's like, hey, you asked me for this. You begged for this on Rosh Hashanah. Please inscribe us, our father, our king, inscribing the Book of Merits. Give me lots of opportunities to do mitzvahs, to have more merit, and to build myself into the greatest person possible. Then I send you a mitzvah opportunity. You're like, I'm not interested. I'm not in the mood for you. I gave it the office. Like, wait, this came directly to your door. You asked for this. So we're looking always to be able to say, maybe this is something that was sent directly from heaven. God sent this to me in order to have it. Now, some people say, I didn't ask for that many merits. You know, I didn't ask for that many opportunities. And obviously, we have to exercise good sense that if something is beyond our budget, beyond our time, beyond our energy, beyond our whatever the circumstances, we have to evaluate it. But it can't be from a place of, ugh, I'm not in the mood for you. It can't be from a place of frustration, annoyance. If those words are coming into play, it may be that we're overlooking something that we're supposed to do. So when the people come knocking at our door for collecting for tzedakah, it's like, this may be the very merit that you asked for. How much you can give, what you can do, that obviously a person has to, again, exercise reasonable understanding to know what they can individually do. So she shared a story about a man who went to a community to raise some money, and he needed to raise a lot of money, and he went to an old friend of his that he had known since elementary school, and he went to his house, and he figured that this person is probably, he would ask him if he would help him. So he went to him, and he told him, he said, I don't know what the currency of the time was, like, it was 400, but it sounded like it was probably like $400,000. I mean, it was a lot of money. Maybe it was 4 million. It was like a lot of money. We'll say 400,000. And the man said, you know, I'm too busy. I can't do it. You know, I can't help you. And so the guy who was his friend said, didn't even get upset. He goes, okay. He was like, that's all? He just said, okay. He said, yeah, I'll ask someone else. He goes, well, who are you going to ask? Who else would help you raise so much money? I'm like, I know you, and I'm not going to help you. And like, who else are you going to ask? So he basically said to him, there's somebody, you know, Hashem wrote up in the Book of Merits, there's somebody who has written the amount that this person has the merit to be given the opportunity to help me raise this money. I thought that it was kind of seems logical, natural, that you were the one, since I know you, so I figured I would ask you, but I guess you're not the one who was written to be able to have this opportunity. So how does this person react?
I want to.
Oh, no. Like, wait. You're telling me, like, wait. I'll help you. So he went to the market, and somebody had just closed the deal and had that exact amount of money, and to give maser, to give the 10%, they closed a big deal. And the person was like, sure, I'll give you the money. I have the maser money. I have the tithing. I need to give it anyway. I'll be happy to give it to you. So he said, oh, I can't believe it. So the man was like, thank you so much for asking me. I can't believe it. I would have just overlooked my merit that came to me, and I would have said no and just shut the door in front of to my merit to have this opportunity for tzedakah. So it's not just tzedakah. It's lots of opportunities come our way. And Eliezer was expressing, saying, I want this to be lefanai, before me. Arrange it for me. I want to be the vehicle for this. And look at, he gets this whole parsha, you know, gets credited to Eliezer. This is his parsha, of everything that he did to see what he could arrange in order to make it happen for Yitzchak to find just the right person. So that's the word of Lifanai. Now he also, yes?
Or maybe you're getting to this, but when does Eliezer switch his mind to say, I want to do this mitzvah rather than I want my daughter to marry?
Ah, so that's the exact, he always wanted to do it. He always wanted to do it.
Uh-huh.
But even when we always want to do something, it's not uncommon that somebody is not 100% wanting to do it. There may be a 2% something of, I don't want to. So that's why this, that notation, that shalshelet, it's about moral indecision, but it doesn't mean the person's not going to do what they're going to do. It just means that it doesn't come easily to them. They had a struggle. We're going to see this also when Joseph flees from Potiphar's wife. And he fled. It's like, he fled, but there was a part of him was like, you know, I'm a healthy man, you know, this is a beautiful woman. Like, there's something. So it just means that there's something else in there. It's an admixture of both feelings, and it was a struggle. But he always wanted to fulfill it, but there was a struggle that was included in that. Yosef also is a struggle.
Also shalshelet.
That's the third one in Bereishit.
What's the first one?
The first one is Lot's wife turning back. Looking back is there.
Ellen, where's the trope? I want to look at it.
Oh, if you look at the 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth line from the bottom on page 110.
Oh, okay.
And if you look at the 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth word from the right. You see, it just looks like someone made a mistake, that they just, like, scribbled something.
Yeah.
It's a Z. Wow. So it's really the indication of that kind of, that there, it says, the Hebrew term is that he was nogea. He was nogea, he had a vested interest in another piece, and if you have a vested interest, even if you are 100% committed, you have a vested interest. That's what we call, there's a slight bribe to the other side, and that's, when people have vested interest, they can't say 100% that they don't, that it won't affect them. It's like, it does affect them. So this was where Eliezer was coming from.
Did you say there was a fourth one?
The fourth one is in the book of Vayikra, which has to do with Aaron and the offer. I'm not sure exactly where it is, but it's in Aaron's offering for something. I don't remember exactly. Interesting, they're all over words that start with a vav and a yud. It just happens that they are there.
Do they all involve women?
No.
Those dilemmas?
No. Mm-mm. Eliezer was it for his daughter, Yosef, because a family member. He had a personal, like your family, that you're loyal to your family. Huh. Yosef was about sexual desire. Lot's wife was about her not wanting to let go of evil place of Sodom. And Aaron's was about a place of humility, of not feeling worthy. So, no, they're all different. They're all the different things where people have mixed feelings. And most things we have mixed feelings about. We don't like to admit it, but we have mixed feelings about just about anything and everything that's important. I have mixed feelings. So, he had mixed feelings. Okay, but he was committed. You can be committed and have mixed feelings at the same time. All right. This also plays into why he uses another word where he says, to make it happen today. So it sounds a little chutzpahdik that you're praying to God that you want this miracle to happen. And by the way, right now, today, hayom, that he says it. Hakreina lifanai hayom v'aseh chesed, and do good with my master Avraham. So why does he say hayom? He says hayom today. So we're still on verse 11, kind of dissecting that same verse. Yes, I'm sorry, verse 12, I apologize. Verse 12, arrange it for me this day. So it says part of it is that he wanted it to be this day because he was concerned, because of his mixed feelings, that he was afraid that if this kind of lasted too long, that he was going to put himself through the process, going back to what we said before, that he was going to go look for this family, that he was going to investigate, that he was going to start asking questions, and that he would be biased. His bias would lead him to say, there's not the right person, or that he would even propose the relationship in such a way that the woman would say no, like, you don't want to go marry a 47-year-old man, and you're only 12, do you? Like, I mean, there's a way to undo a relationship. So that he was concerned that if he let time pass by, the time also has a way of weakening our resolve. Whenever we, even if we have resolve to do something, this is like, if you resolve to do something, do it immediately. Do something toward it, because the more time that passes, if it's tomorrow, like you start working on the process, then all sorts of things can happen. So just even with that he wanted to be able to just like get things done and not undermine the process. So he's asking God, please make this happen now so that it can be done and we can finish this up. On the other hand, it was also understood to be an expression of faith, because when we talked about Eliezer going and traveling to Abraham's family, we understand that it was, wherever it is, that it was not close by. No. If it was so close by, Avraham could have just, gotten on the, telephone, sent some smoke signals, say, have you got a girl for me over there? It would have been an easy thing. But he's sending Eliezer. If you're sending somebody with 10 camels, you don't send somebody with 10 camels on a local ride. So we're talking about sending somebody far off. However, it says, according to the Midrash, that Eliezer got there like in a blink of an eye. That he left and he got there in a blink of an eye. And he was like, whoa, that was fast. He appeared at the well. He appeared outside the city and he was all of a sudden there. It's like as God like beamed him over there. So now Eliezer's like, okay, this angel thing is working. God is definitely making something happen here. We're on a roll. So then his prayer is like, okay. So it's interesting. We might think that if things are going well and we've experienced a miracle or if we've experienced one of God's blessings, that we should quit while we're ahead. Like, oh, thank you, you don't need to do anything more for me. What do we do instead? Okay, let's keep this going. And while we've got this going, let's add something else in as well. So if you notice, we even have an example of this when we say Birkat HaMazon, the grace after meals. We're thanking God for the bread that he has blessed us with. And what do we add on to it? Our other requests of what God should be doing for us? It's like, as long as you've given me bread, and that's really great, and I'm so thankful, let's add in all the other things that we would also like. The redemption, the restoration of King David, and go bring us back to the Holy Land and bless the whole land of Israel and my family and everybody. It's like we take it as an opportunity to bring in more blessing, not say, oh, no, God, you've done enough for me, so you don't need to do any more. It's like, oh, this is working well. Let's have some more because I see you, God, in action here. Please bring me more. So he's saying, so since this day is clearly blessed because I got here in a split second, let's have this also happen today. While this is such a good day, this seems to be an auspicious time. Susan. Mm-hmm. You're in the flow. I mean, think about what we do like when somebody's getting married. The bride and groom, it's a good day for them. It is an auspicious time for them to pray, to ask for other things for other people and for themselves. That's why you want to go and have the bride and groom, people hand them pieces of paper. It's like going to the kotel. Can you pray for this one? Can you pray for this person? For they should have a refuah shleima. This one should, they should also find a spouse. This one should find a livelihood. This one should have this. It's like the bride and groom is like, they become like this prayer center. It's like, why? It's like, why are you bothering them? They're trying to get married. It's like, because it's a good day for them. And when it's a good day, it's auspicious time for them to pray and for their prayers to be heard. So that's what we do. It's like we give that all to them. It's very beautiful to see a groom standing under the chuppah with little pieces of paper and davening for people. You think, like, shouldn't I just focus on myself? I mean, this is my day after all. It's like, yes, it is your day, so use it for something good. So Eliezer's doing the same thing. It's like, oh, Hayom, this is a good day. Things are going really well. Let's continue this and have God arrange this match for Yitzchak as well, and we'll just continue on. So that's why we see it as a prayer as opposed to a sign. He's like, let's continue the flow of this bracha here. Okay. So again, just something for us to think about is when something is going well, we do say thank you. We do say thank you. And then we say, and by the way, also some other things as well. Like while we're asking or while we're receiving, let's receive some more. And your Hebrew birthday is an auspicious time, all those things.
Oh, really?
Yeah, your Hebrew birthday.
Well, the sacred miss you and another one you miss.
Even it's really cute. And even in the Gan, even in the preschools in Israel, in the religious preschools, they kids give brachas, give blessings a birthday person.
What did they say?
I don't know, like, may you win at softball or, I don't know, soccer. I mean, you should, I don't know what they say, but they give and receive blessings. And the person sits there with a little crown on, like their little Yom HaLedet Sameach. It's like the cutest thing ever. Okay, so yeah, it's a good time to bless. Yeah, you're a conduit. You are a vehicle for that. So good things happen. Good things are brought about by good people. Now, we're not just saying good things happen to good people. Good things happen through good people. You become a conduit for good things. We don't want to be a conduit for anybody else's suffering at all. Okay. So then the next word that we want to focus on in that exact same verse there is something that, is we want to look at, I take that back, we're going to look at the test that he has, that Eliezer has for Rebecca or for the woman. And we saw before, we already saw that it had to be something that showed an amount of extreme kindness. Somebody who was also energetic, enthusiastic. You know, if you have somebody who's energetic, enthusiastic, and generous, that sounds like a really good person. However, there's something else that's going on, which is that she's not just a next good wife for Yitzhak, just like an anybody kind of wife. That would be good for anybody. She also is the next matriarch of the Jewish people, which means if you want somebody who's going to be the next matriarch of the Jewish people, what quality must she have?
Hospitality.
Hospitality, but now we're talking about from the religious realm. What should she be doing? What would we need to want her to be? Yeah, we have to have her be a ma'amin. She needs to be a believer in God. Because it's very nice if she was average idol-worshipping person. There's plenty of nice idol worshippers, plenty of nice Gentile people who are lovely, generous, wonderful people. That doesn't qualify them to be the next matriarch. This person has to be somebody who's going to join the Jewish people who believes in God. So how is that possible? So, and how does being a person of chesed work with that? So this is a beautiful idea from Rav Pinkus, says, anybody who has a pair of eyes and who has even a basic intellect cannot help but perceive that there is God in the world. It is obvious, plain as day, and clear. There's just one question. Then how is it there are so many people who don't believe in God?
Right.
It's like, it's not an intellectual problem. It is a heart problem. It is a problem with the person of themselves, of their desires. It says, why don't people want to see God? It's because, first of all, that means that they might need to do what God is commanding them to do. So it's easier to say, I don't believe in God, than it is to say, I don't want to do what God wants me to do. So you just say, oh, I don't believe, you know, because then you're off the hook. If you certainly not be obligated to do anything that God wants you to do if you don't even believe in the God. So it becomes a way to protect one's ego to say, I don't believe. So what makes us not believe, make us not want to, is I have my self-interest. I'm interested in what I want to do. I want to do A, B, and C. God wants me to do D, E, and F. It's like, I want to do what I want to do. I am self-focused. So we've heard this in another realm, but he uses it here. It says, what's the difference between a window and a mirror? It says, a little bit of silver. So normally we think of that it's silver meaning money, and that money blinds us to the needs and looking through the window and seeing the needs of other people, and we have a mirror and we just focus on ourselves. Very thin layer of silver. But the word for silver in Hebrew is kesef. And kesef is related to the word for desire. Kesef means desire. So we get things that we desire with kesef, that's money, but the root means desire. It says, our own desires for what I want is what blinds me to the reality that if I look just out the window, I would see evidence that God exists. That it begs the question, how can you look at a world that is so intricately and beautifully designed and say there's no creator of it? It's foolhardy. So how can someone be that blind? It says all you need is a very thin layer of kesef and you will see nothing but oneself. So how does this interact with the idea of chesed? What is the nature of chesed by definition? Chesed is about looking to out and looking to see the other person and what they need. And in fact, you go sometimes against your own needs, against your own wants, against what's in your best interest, what you feel might be your best interest. And Rivka is the person who does this. So what Eliezer, it doesn't look like a test for belief in God, but by demonstrating the quality of chesed, of being so magnanimous, and not just like, some people do nice things because they feel bad for people. It's like, ugh, Nebuch, the poor thing, I need to help them. So that when the person then is okay, it's like, okay, you're okay now, so carry on. But a person who is a true giver, who is just always looking to give to other people, they're not doing it because they feel bad for the person, and they're not evaluating the person in that way. So how do we see this, that Rivka is that kind of person? Is Eliezer comes, and he comes with servants as well. It's not just Eliezer. He comes like with other people as well. He is a strong, healthy man, nothing indicating that he is not. When he asks for the water, and Rivka gives for him, you would say, Okay, so after you've been fed, however old Rivka is, we know she is not fully grown. She's young. We won't even discuss different opinions of how old she is. She is a young girl. She's a young woman. Eliezer never lifts one finger to help her do anything in watering his camels. He stands there like this. Now, I don't know about you, but if it were me, and after I gave somebody... Lo yafeh. Yeah, it's not so nice. You would think, okay, I would say, okay, I gave you some water, you're refreshed, let's go together and water your camels. I mean, you're going to just stand there? But Rivka, she doesn't say anything. She's like, I'll water your camels. It's like she's saying, I'm a giver. I don't care. If you need help, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure to give. I'm Avraham. How can I help you? Let me give you the best thing ever. It's like, wow, this is the person. This is a giver because she is a giver. This is a person who is seeing other people's needs, things needs. And she's not saying, go feed your own camels. She's like, I'm happy to do it. If you're not doing it, you must have your reason. So I don't care. I'll help you. I'll do it. And it says she's running back and forth and filling and filling and filling and feeding. So this is her. She says, ah, this is someone who sees God. Because this person is not looking at what's in it for me, what do I want, what do I need, it's all about me, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that. It's like, this is a person who is looking out, this person sees God. This person will fit just A-okay in Avraham's house. And she is clearly cut from the same cloth as Avraham in her perspective. So it also then makes sense that what is Avraham known for? The exact same thing. He was a Baal Chesed. He was the epitome of Chesed, and he was the first one who comes back to a full belief in God. Those two things go hand in hand. It's not just like, oh, he's a believer who happens to be a really nice guy. It's like, no, the act of Chesed and that kind of giving leads one to the intellectual clarity. So it's just like you don't have to be smart to see out a window. You just have to look and not have it be blocked by self-interest and desire. Susan.
You said earlier, though, that there are non-Jews or non-believers who are kind and good, but are God worshippers. But I mean, how come their kindness doesn't demonstrate their belief?
They're probably, in fact, don't you know people who are not Jewish who are very gracious and giving and everything, and they're very godly people.
Right.
And they do.
And how does Eliezer tell the difference?
Tell the difference? Because all he needs to know is that if she is kind in that way, in such an extreme way, that she is on par with somebody who sees God, and someone who sees God clearly like that is someone who then can be educated into the...
She's not Jewish. But she has the quality,
material. Yeah, she has the material for... She's going to be a wonderful convert. So she converts. Okay, same as Avraham and Sarah convert to being Jewish. But if you are not that kind of a person, a not giver, you won't ever see it. So her father and her uncle, they are not going to... They don't see it because they are, they're not givers, they're takers.
Lavan
and Betuel in this case. Okay, so they're not going to get it.
Was she in fact a part of Abraham's family?
She was, but he doesn't. Eliezer doesn't.
Why does he want somebody from this family?
Because he knows that his family, even though they are idol worshippers, that there are people in his family that have good qualities like chesed. And that the person who has that chesed, they become Jewish very easily. Somebody who doesn't, you can't change that. He said that's harder to change. Somebody who has that kind of perception of God in the world, it's just a very small step to direct that Jewishly. Someone who is about themselves and what I want, and I don't want to listen to that person, you're not, they're looking at a mirror, they can't see through the window.
And so how is she related to Avraham?
Niece.
Okay.
Yeah, niece. So it is Avraham's brother's granddaughter.
Does it have something to do with Nahor?
Yes.
Because she says...
Oh, daughter, I'm sorry.
Daughter of Bethuel.
Right.
The son of Milcah, whom she bore to Nahor.
Right.
So that's what Beer Milcah is named after, because Isaac's well is in that neighborhood.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. So, yes, it's the family tree, and I think the family tree, I don't remember
so
where it is.
Nahor and
I'm sorry. Yeah, all of the matriarchs.
Rebecca and Isaac are cousins.
They're all related. All the matriarchs are related to each. They're all, I'm sorry?
77.
Page 77, you can see it. Let's go back there for a moment.
All the matriarchs are
related to each other. Because they're all from Abraham and Sarah's family. Abraham and Sarah are related. Yeah. That's why when he says she's my sister, she is his niece. Okay, so go to page 77. Abraham, Haran, and Nahor. And you go down to Nahor and you can see Rebecca in about in the middle of the page and then over to the right angle to Isaac. So it's Nahor's granddaughter.
Nahor is Abraham's brother?
Nahor is Abraham's brother.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not connected to Nahor.
Yeah, it is.
Milcah.
Milcah, I'm sorry. That's because that is, I'm sorry, it's great-granddaughter. It's Rebecca's father is Betuel, and Betuel is the son of Milcah, and Milcah is the daughter of Nahor.
Abraham and Sarah are in the same relationship. Abraham and Sarah is
underneath. She's underneath because she's the next generation. She is Haran's daughter. Okay. Okay, let's go back because we have another point we want to finish up with here. So anyway, so he does find out. Now, it could have been like, what if this isn't somebody from Abraham's family? This test is like, after all this whole test, like, oh, never mind, this is the wrong person. So basically, what he's seeing is that this must be someone from Abraham's family because this is a quality that was unique to Abraham's family at that time. But he doesn't give her the gifts until he finds out exactly who she is. So it's not like, whoever does this, I will give the gifts to, and she's the one. After everything happens, when... he gives some of the gifts, that's true. The man took the golden nose ring, etc. And then he said, whose daughter, on page 113, verse 23, whose daughter are you? And then she says, so he doesn't say anything about you're the wife. He gives her some of the gifts, but he doesn't say, okay, you're the one for Isaac. He doesn't say that until after he knows for sure who she is. But he is making this all happen. The last piece... Yes, that's why it's not against halacha for a woman to wear a nose ring.
Do we know if it's like here or?
Here, not the one that looks like an animal.
So he had a pierced her, right?
Oh my goodness.
I don't know, maybe she already had a pierced at Claire's, at the malls, whatever, you gave her a new one, I don't know. No, I don't think he pierced it, I think that was like the common jewelry of the time. It was okay.
So she already had a...
I don't know. Yes. I don't know. Yes. She already had it. It was already healed. It had been 6 weeks, and she was ready for a new one. Okay. And plus, it was pure gold anyway, so it was fine. Okay. So, going back to where he also says this, if you have a few extra moments, because this is really something important for us to also know, and that is when he says, may you arrange it for me this day. The word in Hebrew that is used is hakre na. It's in the fourth line from the bottom. On page 110. It's in between Yud Bet and Yud Gimel. And it's the second word, hakre na, from the word mikra.
I'm in a different Bible. What chapter verse?
Oh, we are in chapter 24, verse 12. Chapter 4, verse 12. It's the same sentence we've been doing.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's the exact same sentence. It's just the word, looking at the word for it, says to arrange it from the word mikra. Now, there's something about the word mikra.
Yeah.
Mikra, usually, we understand to mean chance. Okay? It happened. It just happened. It just happened. So we have that as an opposite idea from hashgacha. Hashgacha pratit, which means divine personal supervision. So on one hand, it sounds like, why is Eliezer saying, make it just happen, like by chance that this happens? So we learn something really fascinating, which is that we don't have the concept called chance. We have two ideas that are about divine intervention. One is called hashgacha, And that divine intervention is divine supervision, just like a mashkiach in a heksher. It means supervision. So divine supervision happens either through a series of messengers, like of angels, that there is a divine will that something happen, and so the kind of like the command goes out, and all of the angels and different forces are set into motion to make something happen until it does happen. That's called supervision. Then there's called something that's called direct divine action. We call that mikra. That is what we call it just happened. Not it happened by chance, it happened through direct intervention. Do not pass go, do not have any angels involved, just directly happening. And that is what Eliezer is asking for. He's saying, make it happen, not any through messengers. Because what happens when messengers get involved and this one has to make Rivka, you know, get her clothes on at the right time, and she's putting on her shoes, and then she's going to come to the well, and she's going to arrive at this moment rather than that moment. Like, what happens when there's lots of people involved in a committee?
It
brings out opportunities for things to go wrong. And it's called having the Satan. The Satan interferes. It's like, oh, so this divine come out. I see a lot of action of the heavenly angels helping things happen around Rebecca. There must be something important going on. I better go interfere with that. Says that's Hashkacha. Says that's usually how things are done. But sometimes things need to be done in Mikra. Sometimes it has to be just a divine act. We see an example of this in the story of Ruth, when Ruth happens to be in the field of Boaz. Now, we all know that it didn't just happen by chance that she was there. It says God made her be there. Like, I'm putting you right there. You're there because that's what needs to happen next. So that what Eliezer is asking for is for super duper hashkacha, not through the normal channels, but I want the boss to come right down now and help me with my problem. It's not like where you go into a store and you want to return something and say, oh, I have to ask my supervisor, I have to ask my manager, and then you write a letter, and it's like, okay, and well, no, they said you couldn't have the discount, you only had the discount when you bought it, you can't get it today. It's like, ugh. Just get the owner down here. So there's a famous story about Nordstrom's where somebody has a problem with shoes, and she ends up calling like the owner of Nordstrom's, who like takes care of it right then. It's like no channels, just direct. It says that's Mikra. So it says the nations of the world believe in chance. We don't believe in chance. We believe either it is direct intervention or it is through the channels into supervision. One or the other, and that Eliezer is asking for, let's make this direct, let's not have anything go wrong here, let's just have it be direct intervention, God make it happen. And how do we know that it does happen exactly in that way, is go to page 113, verse 15. And Janice, why don't you read that for us?
And it was when he had not yet finished speaking that suddenly Rebecca was coming out. She who had been born to Jethuel, son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, brother of Abraham, with her jug on her shoulder.
Okay. So it's like he didn't even have the words finished out of his mouth of what this test was going to be. And it's like, okay, we're doing that, exactly what you asked for. He wasn't even done speaking yet. And suddenly Rebecca appears on the scene. It's like, whoa, no transition, nothing happened. It's like all of a sudden it just happened. And if we look at our lives, we can often see times where that exactly happens. It's like, all of a sudden, it's like, where did that come from? How did I get here? How did that happen? You say, well, it just like happened. And lest we think, oh, that just happened by chance, that I just happened to be wherever. It's like, no, it's our definition of happen means that was a direct divine intervention that put you right there at that time. So we don't call it just happened. So Eliezer, in this one sentence here, before he even gets started with what his whole request is going to be, is telling us so much. And so just to summarize at the end, then going back to page 111, when he says there that he is recognizing at some level that he has some ambivalence, that he has a piece of him that does want his daughter, but he is also then praying to Hashem saying, wow, this day has gone so beautifully already, I got here so quickly that please let this continue and continue with all of this greatness that you have worked for my master Avraham. And notice that he's not saying any, taking any credit. It's not saying, well, God must love me plenty because look what he did for me. It's like, wow, aseh chesed im Adoni Avraham. Do this and totally in the merit of Avraham. So he knows that he's a channel, but he wants to be the person. I want this mitzvah to happen through me. I want this shidduch to happen through me, this next stage. I want to be the one. And that we should also ask, let me be the one to have the merit of the merit and the opportunities that are going to come knocking at our door, usually when we're not ready for it, because it doesn't usually come with a little placard that says, hi, I'm your merit opportunity. It usually comes while you're in the middle of doing 10 other things. You're frustrated, annoyed, tired, whatever. It's like, what do you want? You know, like, that's, it's like, it's the merit opportunity. It is thinly disguised for us. And that he wants it to be for him, before him. He wants it today to happen, to continue on. And he sets up a test to identify Rivka's, not only her chesed, and amazing, that would be great enough, a wonderful enough relationship, but to be the next matriarch, to be the person who would be comparable of a conversion like Avraham, that she must be somebody who is God-centered already. She will convert to Judaism, she chooses that, but that she sees God, and that that is the essential, and that it's expressed through her chesed, that she doesn't have her own desires as a wall up, preventing her from seeing clearly. She has a window rather than a mirror. And that all of us can understand that this mikra, that this idea of something that happens, is that God is running the show here. It's just a matter of whether it's going to be indirect or direct supervision and involvement in our lives. And hopefully we all see all of the opportunities that are presented to us each and every day. It's not just only Eliezer and Yitzchak, it's every single day that we are presented with multiple opportunities for all the merits that we davened for at Rosh Hashanah. So we should all have, find all of the opportunities that we have to fulfill them and to reach our next place. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
What does it say about Rivka and Yitzchak? Does it say that Rivka was born to Betuel and Yitzchak was born to Betuel?
Yes, Nahor.
Why Nahor? Because Nahor is the father of Milcah.
But it says Milcah.
I'm sorry.
That's what confusing me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Nahor and Nahor. Milk is the wife of Nahor. I'm sorry. I apologize. But it's not his daughter, because I apologize. Milcah is Haran's daughter. I apologize. Do you see that? Haran is the father of Milcah, Lot, and Sarah. Right.
The chart doesn't match what's being written.
Yes, Nahor marries Milcah, and Reuma is like a concubine. I think that's what that means.
Right.
Okay. Okay, so Nahor and Milcah are husband and wife.
Exactly. So then Rebecca is the granddaughter.
Granddaughter. Yes, yeah, so not great granddaughter. So I said that wrong. It's granddaughter of Nahor.
Of Abraham.
So not the granddaughter of Abraham, the granddaughter of Nahor.
No, but like, in terms of generations.
Yes.
So his husband was much older.
Yes, he was. Hi.
Except maybe not.
No, I mean, meaning converts mean that they came to knowledge of God. They chose belief in God. They were nothing. It says that when Avraham was young, he grew up in a pagan family. So, a master of it. So he grew up that, but he didn't believe it. So when I said converted, that's why I went like converted, because you didn't, there wasn't a conversion, there was a choosing. Now we have conversion, but until after the until the Torah was given, people could choose, but there was understood to be a conversion.